Hey everybody, Armand here. I know judging by the title of the episode, you may be wondering what the hell. I thought it was going to be about Wild at Heart. Well, we did the episode on Wild at Heart, and we actually did it with another group of friends. Had a very fun group episode. But the catch with these very fun group episodes is that it requires a lot of editing. And there's no way that the editing was going to be completed in time for Friday. So, unfortunately, we have to postpone the Wild at Heart episode to next week. But have no fear, because Jo has been cooking up some content on her own. Jo has basically kind of created this own little mini series where she's going through a Fast and Furious franchise and just reviewing the movies one by one. The running show title we have for it now is Lost in the Nas, which is fucking brilliant. So, basically, to make up for no new episode this week, we present to you the very first episode of this new little series. And if you like what you hear, if you like what you hear in this episode, then stay tuned, because this is essentially going to be Patreon bonus content. Jo and I have been talking about creating a Patreon for some time now. We just having trouble coming up with ideas for bonus content, but I think this would definitely be something fun and extra on the side that, you know, you can listen to that isn't, you know, the main podcast feed. But yeah, apologies once again for delaying another episode. Look out for the Wild at Heart episode dropping next week on December 17th. All right, hope you enjoy it.
Hey y'all, this is Joe, and I'll be honest, going through a breakup. And, parting is, such sweet sorrow. Or whatever. And, it happens. It's life. While I'm, you know, processing my emotions, which I'm still doing, I am going to rewatch all of the Fast and Furious movies that we have so far, of which there are 10. I legit don't even know who this is for. A lot of people think these movies are dumb. Armand thinks these movies are dumb, so I'm not going to make him watch these. And I know they're goofy and they're cheesy, but they're just so fun. You know, they're like so like weirdly like macho, you know? It's almost like anime, you know? It's like himbo anime, right? It's like Speed Racer, but with more bald men. and to me, that's just such a, like, weird, like, I don't even know why these got as popular as they did, but I'm grateful for it, because they're great popcorn movies, and they're just, yeah, every once in a while, they're just fun to put on. So I'm just gonna not really review them, and these are gonna be shorter episodes, but I'm just gonna evaluate them, you know, and be like, hey, give you a quick yay or nay at the end. Like, you know, yay, you should go back and watch this just for goofs. Maybe get drunk or something. Or nay, like, maybe just skip this one. So here goes episode one. And thank you for listening.
It's not how you stand by your car. It's how you race your car. You gotta learn that.
Bye.
All right, my friends, I watched it and I did some research on it and I'm going to talk about it. This is the first, it's called The Fast and the Furious 2001, directed by Rob Cohen. He had done some other stuff. I don't know if y'all seen Dragonheart. I haven't even seen that one. And it was written by Gary Scott Thompson and Eric Berquist. I'll be honest, Eric has basically written nothing else except for this one movie, and it was based on a Vibe article called Racer X, and that was about this anonymous Dominican guy who was, yeah, like street racing in Washington Heights. To give some quick backstory as to why street racing got so popular around this time, it didn't really start to pop off in the culture until the 80s, because that was when it started to get huge in Japan. It's not that they were like the only people street racing at this time, it's just that Japanese car companies were really getting in their groove, and these cars were really, like, surprisingly easy to modify, for one. And number two, if you had the means to modify your car, all you had to do was, so around this time in the 80s, Japanese police cruisers, they would top out at about 110 miles per hour. So if you could get your car faster than 110 miles per hour, you're Gucci. You know, like, they're not, of course the police don't like want you to race, but number one, they can't catch you if you're fast enough. And number two, you know, the way Japanese society is, they really don't want to endanger civilians, so they don't even want to try to get in the chase. They'll just let you do your thing. And, you know, there just wasn't, it would be totally unfair to say it was like lawlessness, but it was just a bit looser in terms of, like, there's just, Japan's a lot more kind of like, you know, stringent and straight laced now. Especially with, like, police presence and things like that. But back around this time, you could really, yeah, you could just go for it. And there was, like, you know, Japan's population is kind of aging now, but back then there was still a really, you know, there was this big generation of young people, and, you know, so there was a whole bunch of different subcultures, and one just happened to be street racing, and it got pretty popular. It got so popular to the point that there were even street racing gangs, and one of the more famous ones is actually called Midnight Club. These were mostly like salarymen, you know, dudes that were like work in the bank during the day, and then by night they would just fly down the highway like 160, 180, 200, you know. Yeah, it was a crazy time. And they were like Midnight Club was like an ethical street racing gang. It was also very, like, secretive and selective. It was wild. Basically, it got pretty popular in Japan and in Tokyo, because, you know, Tokyo is really big. So even though there's a lot of people in Tokyo, there's also just a lot of certain streets and stretches of road that you can, you know, race in, especially around this time. And, you know, pretty soon it just kind of, especially around the 90s, I think, it just kind of, word jumped across the Pacific, and street racing was starting to become a subculture in Southern California, you know, in Los Angeles. Once again, with, you know, a considerate amount of Japanese cars, I couldn't tell you, like, I'm not really a car person, I couldn't tell you exactly
why Japanese cars, but that's just what it was. And so, you know, I guess it was just, I guess, easy to get, and like I said, easy to modify, and yeah, they would race, and you would have this parallel culture of like illegal street racing communities that would also like drag race, you know, like legal drag racing, right? And yeah, they would just kind of like feed and weave into each other. And it wasn't just in Los Angeles, it also reached the East Coast, which is, you know, basically what that article, that Vibe article, was about. And that article was the inciting incident for this movie. You know, the creator saw that and was like, you know what, let's make a movie about street racing. So that's what they did. So it was a mix of, you know, street racing starting to become a bigger thing, and it was also a mix of, it basically goes like this. In the 70s, there were a ton of mostly TV shows. There were a ton of TV shows, some movies about like cops, right? Just you know, on the fucking the New York beat and shit like that, right? And then, I mean, even before that, there were like, you know, radio shows about cops, like Dragnet. But then when you get to the 80s, there is like buddy cop movies, right? So it's like cops still, but it's like an odd couple, you know, and oh, they don't get along as well, but they still gotta catch the bad guy, right? You know, 48 Hours, Lethal Weapon, stuff like that, right? Then you get to the 90s, and it starts to be more about, like, you know, the federales, right? The FBI, and, like, just the really, like, big federal muscle, like, you know, bigger fish to fry type stuff. But another important part of the 90s is you start to have, number one, you know, just more POC as like creators and in the media. And of course, a really big thing is you had the Rodney King scenario, right? Which led to the LA riots, which leads to a lot of Americans realizing that, I mean, of course, you know, some Americans, some darker Americans, were already starting to get an idea of like, man, cops can be kind of shady, right? Like, I don't know if I really trust them. But after the Rodney King scenario and just seeing it so like grossly and vividly, it really reverberated, and you started to have more, especially like younger people who are just like a lot more wary of the cops. And you know, a lot of people, just even if they were like, I don't know, kind of sided with the cops, it's like they were still like, man, like this scenario is just kind of not okay, right? So like I said, you have this lineage of law enforcement, you know, like kind of like, I don't know, kind of like patriotism in films and stuff. But then you start to have this, you could say, kind of an eagerness to get away from that, or like, you know, if you want to have like a movie for younger people, you can't just like make it about cops anymore necessarily, right? And another big thing is around this time, racing, so there were like racing, like video games are starting to get better, right? Around the PlayStation had come out by this point, but it was still pretty fresh, and you know, you didn't, for those who don't know, I can't even explain like how crazy it was to see, like, yeah, you know, you have maybe like an SNES and you see like, you know, it's just very, oh yeah, look at these cool pixels, right? And then it starts to really racing starts to really look real. And not only that, you know, you would still have racing games like Gran Turismo, or I don't know, like Ridge Racer, like very kind of NASCAR-ish racing in terms of like these racing games were, you still had like a variety of cars to choose from, but they were very set on, you know, very closed tracks. And even if you were racing in the streets, there wasn't a ton of street culture put into it, if that makes sense. But you also had, on the flip side, you had games like Need for Speed, which the first one actually came out in 1994, and it was a game where the cars were a little more like, not flashier in terms of like, you know, like all Porsches and stuff like that. It was more like, you know, the cars were a little more like fun, right? They were a little more like colorful, and you were mostly racing in the streets. And as the series progressed, you would even have like races and challenges where you're being chased by the cops, right? So it was a really, it was a moment in which, like, you know, racing in the media was starting to change. And not to say that this is like, you know, definitely isn't the first movie about racing, but before this point, there was like, you know, I think I mentioned there was like American Graffiti, or I don't know, it was like Death Race, maybe you could even say Cannonball Run. And by this time, those movies, you know, the movies and those characters were fun, but they were kind of cheesy, right? Like, the just things were changing, right? Generation was changing, all that jazz. And so here you have this perfect storm of street culture, racing, new technology, and also they just happen to get really lucky in terms of, even though that Vibe article was set on the East Coast, they chose to set this movie in Southern California, probably just, you know, for like logistics and convenience. But this movie came out in June of 2001, and there's a certain historical event that happened just a few months later. And I'm sure this movie would have still been popular if it came out after 9/11, but it just got so lucky, because even though it came out before, movies that came out around this time and that were set in New York, you know, there was a lot of things in film and media that were set in New York before this point, and they always had a shot of Twin Towers, because that is just such, it was just such an iconic part of the New York skyline. And movies around this point, if they had, you know, scenes around the Twin Towers or like shots of the Twin Towers, they would literally sometimes even have to reshoot or re-edit, you know. And they didn't have to do that. they didn't have to do that because it was set in LA. So like I said, it was just a perfect storm, you know, this luck. I don't even think they thought about trying to make this like a series of movies or anything. They just got lucky in terms of the cast. The cast, you know, is fine. The cast is good. The cast gets the job done. But these were people that didn't have, like, you know, another character that people saw them as. You know, so these were actors that, you know, this audience could really connect with them, and, you know, you could really like sink into their characters, because they, you know, weren't really in much else by this point. Of course, Vin Diesel did end up doing stuff like like Triple X, or like, you know, the Riddick movies. But this was his, like, kind of his big break. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I mean, you just had a lot going for this. And like I said, they knew their demographics. It's a movie where they literally just... Basically, this movie is Point Break, but with, like, yeah, a fresh coat of paint. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, some guy attached to a law enforcement agency is gets in with adrenaline junkies, right? And then he starts to realize that in his search for, like, you know, the perpetrators of his case, it is these adrenaline junkies that he's come to kind of, like, you know, come to really appreciate and understand and become part of the brotherhood. And, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, in that movie, they skydived and they, like, robbed banks. And in this movie, they street race and they rob 18-wheelers. I mean, it's a strange remake. And I don't know if they've ever truly said, you know, this is a remake. But yeah, this was heavily influenced by Point Break and, you know, some of the other things I mentioned. I mean, it would feel weird to, like, go super deep into the story because it feels like, I don't know, who doesn't know what the fuck Fast and Furious is about by this point? Like I said, this movie was super crazy popular, like in theaters and in DVD sales, which, you know, was starting to become a really big part of the revenue streams by this point. I would say in terms of popular culture, this movie really popularized the use of NAS, right? And it had those fucking, yeah, those CGI segments where you, like, zooming into the fucking engine. Oh, this movie is, I'll be honest, it has a soft spot in my heart because it's just, it's kind of, like, goofy, and in some ways it is a little corny, but you still appreciate it. Like, in the moments where it's just kind of like, you know, they want to reel you in and stuff, and like I said, the stunts are actually pretty decent, and not only did they do some of their own stunts, even before this movie, to prepare for this movie, they brought the actors to this, like, F1 racing school. So, you know, of course, Paul Walker was, like, a car guy, and I think Vin Diesel was too. And yeah, they really actually put it to the test for this film, and, you know, the other films too, to give you an idea of just how, not even how cheesy this is, but just how cheesy, how even just Parmesan this could have been. There was even talks of getting the male leads from Saved by the Bell and making them the main characters in this movie. Oh my god. Like, literally, they were gonna make Mario Lopez play Slater. They're gonna make him Dominic Toretto, which is so fucking funny to me. And they were gonna make Mark Paul Gosselaar. Honestly, I don't know how to say this last name. You know, the guy who played Zach, the main guy, they were going to make him Brian. And they were going to make Justin Diamond, who played Screech. They were going to make him Jesse, who was, like, you know, the computer nerd in the movie. And, yeah, they thought about bringing them all in on the same project. But, you know, it was, of course, there was honest pushback in terms of, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't get these, like, kind of goofy people for this movie that was, you know, this movie does kind of take itself seriously, right? Even though it is kind of like a popcorn fun movie. To give you an idea of just how, like how much early 2000s energy is in this soundtrack, the theme
the theme is created by Ja Rule. And I would bet that some of y'all don't even actually know much about Ja Rule, you know, other than like, you know, being mentioned in that Dave Chappelle joke, or maybe like the Fyre Festival disaster, right? But Ja Rule, there was a time, yeah, he was a very major rapper. It was basically, it was like him and DMX that were like, I don't know, like in competition, just sound the most gruff on the mic, right? So Ja Rule did two songs for this. But yeah, he did the theme for it. Some other notable hits include Rollin' by Limp Bizkit, Watch Your Back by Benny Cassette, and to really seal the deal, and this is so sad because this was only in the theatrical version and they've taken it off for subsequent releases, but yes, if you saw this movie in theaters, there was a scene that had Crazy Town's Butterfly. Come my lady, come my lady, you're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Come my lady, come my lady, you're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Such a sexy, pretty little thing. This April bitch, you got me sprung with your tongue ring. And I ain't gonna lie, cause your loving gets me high, so to keep you by my side. And if that don't just take the cake, goddamn. I mean, yes, even though this came out in 2001, this was filmed in mid-2000, and, you know, obviously, the culture, that was the culture at the time, right? So in this first one, they do a lot of, like, pseudo-street racing wisdom. So I gotta tell you some of these quotes. Here's some of the more famous ones. And this was like, you know, this was a time when they were really trying to, like, you know, capture something with Fast and Furious in terms of, like, you know, story and writing and relationships and stuff, right? So there's in the basically towards the beginning, Brian O'Connor loses a street race to Dominic Toretto, which is Vin Diesel's character. And then, you know, Brian gets out, his car is all fucking, his car is all whacked out and smoking. And then Brian's like, I almost had you. And then, you know, Vin Diesel's like, you almost had me.
You never had me. You never had your car.
Right? So that's a classic one. And then, you know, basically he goes on a, you know, these movies are kind of a macho fest, kind of like a masculinity parade type thing, but you also have really badass women like Michelle Rodriguez, right? So, like, she even knocks someone out in this movie. Like, she knocks out a dude. And so it's not to say that there aren't scenes that are like, you know, where they're objectifying women, but there's usually this idea of the women, yeah, will bite back, right? And also, it's very heavily implied that this is set in East LA, just to give you an idea, for those who don't know much about LA, right? The West Side is like the fucking, you know, like, oh, film and music and, you know, the money side. And then East LA is a little more, yeah, it's a little more rough and tumble, but it has a lot more open streets, right? So yeah, street racing and you know, maybe with people that I'm not as well to do, right? Like, this is just, they just want that speed, that adrenaline, and they don't feel like they have much to lose. Also, we'll say the actors are playing people that are supposed to be around like 24 years old, and I don't buy it. I mean, you know, I know that happens a lot in, like, film and TV and stuff, but I'm just, you know, we're just being honest. It's when you, I'm sure back when I was super young, right? Like everyone just looks older, so I didn't think much about it. But nowadays, I'm like, I'm supposed to be 24. Oi. But yeah, anyways, back to the quotes. After that, Vin Diesel, you know, he goes into this whole thing of like, you know, ask any racer.
It don't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning's winning.
Of course, this movie was a kind of a breakthrough for a few different actors, right? Paul Walker, Jordana Brewster, who plays Mia, Michelle Rodriguez, who plays Letty, and, you know, Vin Diesel. But it was really, when this movie came out, people were like, whoa, you know, this Vin Diesel guy kind of has range, because there's this one part where he talks about losing his dad, you know, and like losing his dad in like a terrible racing accident. And he has this this one monologue that's just like, you know,
I live my life a quarter mile at a time. Nothing else matters, not the mortgage, not the store, not my team and all their bullshit. For those 10 seconds or less, I'm free.
Yeah, I mean, it really struck some people, right? And some people, like, even some critics were like, damn, you know, maybe we should keep an eye on Vin Diesel. And of course, something that should be said is street racing, as it stands in the U.S., especially around this time, was very, you know, mostly POC-centric. Even in this movie, right, it's very heavily implied that a lot of these people that are, like, really into racing are Hispanic or Black or Asian. And even the anonymous racer in that Vibe article was Dominican. You know, he was racing in Washington Heights. So yeah, if you're like an impressionable youth, if this is how you first like get an idea of street racing, it is not like, of course it's Hollywood, but it's still not like as far off as it could have been. You know, like, there are really a lot of points where you realize that it feels like this movie shouldn't have worked. You know, like, it is a fun movie, and, you know, it is like I said, it's just a very popcorn movie. But it's so interesting that this did get so popular, and that's definitely part of why I'm like diving into these, because it's just, sometimes you have movies that are like really good and they really don't get much of a following for a while, right? Like cult movies. Sometimes you have movies that are like, I mean, of course it's all subjective, but in my opinion, terrible, like god awful, and then they get fucking made and remade and sequels. And of course, you know, there are people that see this series as part of that. But for me personally, it's, this movie and this series is very cheesy, and there's a lot of like schlock to it, right? But at least in this one, there is this weird marriage of like heart and schlock and just kind of being a spectacle, and like, you know, the stunt work, and like I said, it does, even watching it now, it is like dated at points, but there's still, yeah, there's points where you're watching it and you're like, damn, like I'm really kind of in this moment, you know, like the famous the scene where, like, you know, the truck hijack goes wrong. Of course, the super famous, like, final scene where
they beat the train. It's a very... They do a good job of having the characters be somewhat grounded and having the characters express themselves, like, through the racing and through their cars and things like that, like their vehicles of choice. It's so surprisingly deliberate. Objectively, this doesn't warrant any Oscars at all. But it does have a lot going for it, and it's just even now, it's a fun movie to just put on and just, yeah, maybe chill out, maybe, like, I don't know, drink or smoke too or something, and I do still enjoy it, even now, you know. And I mean, it's partly nostalgia, and sometimes I'm more lenient with like action movies and, like, you know, cheesiness. And yeah, this movie just has a really nice degree of everything. So I'll say it like this. They're like a nice, like when you have like a nice mixtape where it's just like, just a, how things felt in a moment in time. Like, these are really interesting time capsule movies. I think that's kind of why I'm so drawn to them sometimes. Like, they like put a mirror to pop culture, but they also affect pop culture. It's just so weird. And, you know, obviously they really increasingly don't take themselves very seriously, right? They just lean into just being movies. There are a lot of other movies that really can't toe that line. So it's just a perfect storm. So for these movies, I won't rate them. I'll just give like a yay or a nay. And so for this one, obviously, I say yay in terms of, like, you know, should you go back and, like, watch each one in specific. But this one, it's a yay. I think, you know, for those of us who are, you know, more open to this, like, it's like, basically, yeah, it's like goofy kind of like masculinity and like these crazy ass looking cars. And trust me, it gets even better in the second one. And of course, the soundtrack. Oh my god. I would pay a surprising amount to find a copy of one of those original reels where Crazy Towns, where Butterfly is just playing in the background. Oh my god. See, so yeah, like I said, nostalgic, fun. I don't think they really have much of these anymore, but if you could find one of the original DVDs, dude, I remember having the original DVD and like a little DVD. Oh, no. Even just putting them in like a laptop. I did have a DVD player too, but the interactive menus, I remember they went hard on those around this time. And oh my god. If any of y'all had one of those like OG Fast and Furious DVDs with the crazy ass interactive menus, please hit my line, because I need it. I'm sure I could find something on eBay, and they probably aren't even that rare, but I'll be honest, part of the reason I'm doing this, there was a time in my life where, yeah, things were really rough, right? Just things at home were rough. And yeah, I mean, these, of course, I got really into movies, but yeah, these movies were just so easy to get your hands on, and they were, yeah, it was kind of like a bit of a solace. right? Among other things, right? I still did other stuff. So yeah, like I said, I just have a little fondness of it. I gotta find that DVD. I gotta find that, you know, some commentary too. I'm just very interested. And yeah, special features. Ugh, such a geek. Anyways, this is the first one. I will try to not make these too long. It's just that, you know, there's so much backstory for this first one. Thanks for listening. This has been After Turns Videotapes. Thanks for supporting us. I'll just keep these kind of short and sweet. There you go. Bye.
Come, my lady. Come, my lady. You're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Such a sexy, pretty little thing. Fierce nipple pierced with your sexy tongue ring. Come, my lady. Come, my lady. You're my butterfly, sugar, baby.